Hello, hello, hello. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Hey, I hope you're having a good day. So, today, we are going to be talking about autism, and my guest is Deanne Hampton. Deanne has firsthand experience as far as autism and raising children with the autistic disorder. Now, her kids are, of course, a high-functioning autistic disorder. You also hear that autism now has what they call ASD, Autistic Spectrum Disorder. So we're going to find out what that is. Also find out why is it that more and more kids are being discovered with autism. Perhaps discovered is the wrong word to use, but over the years, we've been finding that there have been more and more children who have tested positive for autism or autistic spectrum disorder. And again, many people may not even realize that they have autism for many years because they are high functioning. So again, my guest, Deanne Hampton, will be talking about what this is, perhaps what some of these triggers are, or what are the trigger signs to look for autism in younger children. So please listen and or watch this very important episode. Thank you. You have some firsthand experience with autistic children, right?
Yes, unbeknownst to myself, I have most of my life, well, actually all of my life, experience with autism. For all intents and purposes, I basically developed autism or some of the symptoms of autism, including the allergies and things like that, when I was 8 years old. And so I was after my formative years, so I was able to adjust fairly well. But there are children who, you know, who if they develop autism during their formative years, which is between 0 and 6, that's when the subconscious mind is being formed. And then if they have, because they have such huge sensitivities, during those times, if they perceive something to be traumatic, they're going to carry those traumas with them for the rest of their lives. And then they're triggered after that for the rest of their lives. And I've learned that trauma is basically the basis of autism and the comorbidities that develop along with it, autoimmune inflammatory conditions.
You know, thrown at that age, like you said, 8 years old for you. I recently saw a study that said that there are 1 in 36, I believe, of 8 year olds fall within the autism spectrum, which is a huge number. But then also, like you said, during the formative years, they're discovering more and more children that fall within that autism spectrum, and it's just increasing or has increased over the years. And it sounds like, especially for the past, say, 5 years, it's just really jumped up. Is that because they're finding new ways of testing and studying, or can it be something with the foods that we eat, you know, the pesticides or whatever might be in the foods, and our living habits, whether our lack of sleep and things like that? Can you go into any of that kind of stuff?
Yes, I can. Very much so. Basically, it's all of the above. Everything's contributory because of the sensitivities that they develop. So because they're so sensitive and their immune systems are compromised, and then their nervous systems are also compromised, their nervous systems are affected. And so basically what I've learned is that they're like little PTSD survivors is what they really are, because they have all of those nuances that also go along with PTSD. The problem is they don't have any prior experiences to be able to learn to cope with traumas that they're confronted with. And, you know, think about it. People with PTSD, very, very sensitive with their hearing, you know, Vietnam veterans and veterans in general don't like 4th of July because the fireworks are going off. And because of those acute sensitivities, you know, that they have, and they have strong nerve reactions to them, they're basically, it's basically related somewhat to PTSD, which I like to call it PTSI, because I consider trauma, you know, surviving trauma and having those reactions, I consider those to be injuries. I don't consider them to be just a disorder that just develops out of nowhere.
Wow. Well, I just want to throw this out real quick, because you do have a book coming out as well, right? Or it has not come out yet?
It has not come out yet. Now, okay. I'm doing some other work first before I release it, because I'm trying to get a feel for what my readers want. I basically wrote our story out in 30 days, and it's called Cruel Diagnosis, because I received cruel diagnoses for my afflictions that I had related, and so did my children, and so did my sisters. So I have a lot of experience, observation, self-experience. So I'm just trying to get the word out to other people that we need to start trying to look at things from that child's perspective and from a PTSD perspective, so that we can do more help earlier in addressing the first disorders that arise. And those are eating disorders, sleeping disorders, and behavioral disorders. They're just three basic primary disorders that we're talking about that develop when the child is just maybe 2 or 3 years old. And there's lots that can be done to address those primary disorders, and maybe we can actually prevent or avoid further disorders from developing from that. And okay, then we wouldn't have a full autism diagnosis.
Yeah, because a lot of people have a predisposition to autism, right? And then, like you said earlier, there are triggers and possibly these things as far as a lack of sleep or whatever it might be may trigger that autism. I don't know if I'm saying that correctly, but is that correct? That there's a lot of folks, a lot of us who have a predisposition for it, but we have not had that triggered it.
Right. Yes, I believe so. And what's interesting about that too is that I found that generational trauma experienced by our forebears and generational chemical exposures and things like that, those chemical exposures are actually called endocrine disruption or hormone disruption. And so when those hormones are disrupted, then that means your DNA can go crazy. You can end up with mitochondrial disorders. You can end up with your mitochondrial not being able to do a good job of cleaning up your body and taking care of toxins appropriately. And so those are the people, because, I mean, think about it. If they're saying vaccines always caused autism, then that would mean every vaccinated child would have autism. So why doesn't every vaccinated child have autism? And that was my question. And so what I discovered was that the vaccines can act as a trigger. However, that's not the root cause of it. It's the fact that these children have these mitochondrial disorders, and that they can be triggered by environmental chemicals. They can be, triggered by trauma, emotional trauma, physical trauma, and even surgeries or, medical procedures or things like that. Anything that feels, to the child, like they need to survive something, then they end up getting stuck in survival mode, and they shut down. And some of them can't speak because of nerve damage that's done. But what's really sad about that too, is also that, these kids that can't speak, they're finding out now that all of them are brilliant inside and have been locked in and cannot get out. And they just released a movie called Spellers, and it's supposed to be amazing. And it's about these kids who were in their teens before they did this program called Spell to Communicate, I guess is what it's called. And they, you know, they're able to finally communicate and express themselves and say, you know, tell the world how brilliant they are in there, and that they've been talked to like they're not anything but brilliant, you know. And so it's really encouraging to me, and I have such a love for all of these kids, all of them, mm-hmm. you know, and the adults, because my sisters should have had autism diagnoses, and instead, especially women, there's a there was a survey done in the UK that I read about, and they surveyed millions of people, I guess, and they had over 700,000 women respond back and say, yes, I was treated for mental illness, but really I should have been treated for level one autism. And you know, they showed all the signs. It usually starts out with OCD from the time you're a child, and then it progresses to borderline personality disorder diagnoses and all of that kind of stuff. Well, all of that can be avoided now that we know what the roots are.
You know, a couple of things too that struck me with as far as autism goes and how we perceived it or how we judged. That might be a poor way of saying it, but you know, oftentimes the outside folks would look at somebody and visually determine and say, oh, autism, where that's not necessarily the case. It's like I said, it could be something that's predisposition. It could be something that's generational, which would mean that, you know, if you were exposed and you're a parent, but you don't show the signs or you don't have the signs or it's very, very minimal, it could be passed on to your child or even to your grandchild. So, yes, like you're saying, if there's any doubt or any questions, we should be taking whatever tests necessary. And like I said, any type of preventative, I'm going to just say preventative medicine, but preventative measures to help change or correct. And it's so hard to find the words because I'm not a scientist and I don't know any better than to say to change or fix, but I think we know that it's not going to cure it, you know.
Right.
It's probably always going to be in there if you have it, if you're predisposition to it.
Yes, but what we can do is we can curb a lot of the comorbidities that end up making life so difficult, and those are the health comorbidities. You know, and the generation now, you know, the generation of millennials, they're saying we don't want to be called autistic. You know, we're going to be called neurodiverse, or we're going to be called neurodivergent if we're going to express, you know, that's a part of who we feel we are. And so, you know, it does become ingrained as far as who they are. And my daughter even told me, she said, I love myself, Mom. And she said, and I am grateful and happy for all of my experiences because they made me who I am today. And that really, you know, it touched my heart because I have a lot of guilt. I carry a lot of guilt because I've been told over and over again, well, you just should have known. You should have known that your kids couldn't take this or do this or, you know, whatever. And, you know, honestly, the medical systems, the educational systems and everything didn't just know either. So they haven't served us well. And what I want to do is I want to serve them. I want to help them understand how to teach our kids, how to treat our kids, you know, and everything. One thing that I did do too is I watched a 6-hour podcast, a video cast, and it was put out by the NIH, and it was at the University of Pittsburgh. And it was these amazing people on this panel who were telling about their experiences with having social developmental disabilities, which includes autism. And what was interesting about it is this one lovely lady on there at 4 hours and 45 minutes said, I have to say, I can't say it strongly enough. There's something about microdosing. If you're going to take medications, you don't want to over medicate someone who has these social developmental disorders, because we know now that they cannot, you know, process these toxins long term, especially through their systems. So she was saying right there, you know, she was on 16 different medications. And she didn't have a life. And she said, I needed to raise my children. You know, I needed to be able to function. And she said, so slowly but surely, I came off of those medications. And I only take one medication that is for ADHD that is microdosed. And she said, I got my life back. How important is that? I mean,
yeah.
My kids were put on multiple medications from the time they were 6 years old. So there is something to that, because then they developed comorbidities, you know, that are inflammatory, chronic illness, and autoimmune issues from that. And I've had autoimmune my entire life since I was 8 years old. I ended up with chronic fatigue syndrome I was told that I had that at 19. And then I met my husband, and then I had my children at 22.
Oh, wow.
So chronic fatigue syndrome does have something to do with it. I don't know. I'm not a scientist either, and I'm not a doctor, but I am an experiencer. You know, I have experienced these things, and I have become an expert in finding out what helps. So that's where I am.
So did you come up with this foundation or something called a different kind of dispensary?
Yes, it's actually through a foundation. It's called Open Collective. Mm-hmm. And I have a link to it on my website. And that's at deannehampton.com. And it's a wonderful opportunity for people to donate to the cause. And what I intend to do is I'm going to start out, this is not the entirety of the plan, but I'm going to start out helping families have access to the information that I have. I'm going to do short videos and they're going to be, you know, descriptive and labeled so that members of my group can go in to my website and find the answers that they need within 5 minutes and get those answers. Because a lot of families, you know, I've seen them on Facebook, I've seen them on social media in general. And they're just lost. They say, I don't know what to do for this child. You know, he's not potty trained. I don't know what to do with this. I don't know. And those answers can be found in what I've done, because I actually did it with my grandson. I pulled him out of no eye contact. I pulled him out of the inability to sit still. I did a lot of work with him. And a lot of that work included these products that I want to endorse, even though I'm not paid to endorse them. I, you know, they were just such miracle workers for us that I want to share them with other people. And if they can't afford to get them and use them, then I'm going to try to find a way to help them out with that, with the cost.
So I have a question about that, because nowadays, when you hear the word dispensary, you think of, right? Marijuana, yes. CBD. And is that where we're going with this?
Well, sort of. It can, you know, medical marijuana certainly can be a part of the healing of the comorbidities. It can be insofar as just using CBD products for these children. And just a few years ago, you know, it wasn't even legal to give CBD products alone, you know, to mm-hmm. children. But in our state, we have a card system, you know, and two doctors have to approve it for a child. And they do it quite often, I guess, for children with autism. But then again, we have to worry. We still have to consider, maybe not worry, but consider the need for holding back, you know, making sure to start out with just microdosing of anything that's given to a child with that kind of sensitivity, and then work up to the least effective dose for them in their whatever situations that arise. But that would have been much greater for us. I wish we would have had that, you know, when our children were small, instead of being given multiple.
Yeah, I didn't mean to put you on the spot about that, about the marijuana, no. But, you know, that's the first thing is somebody hears dispensary, we're thinking immediately to that. Because also in the news, you know, as of late, we've been hearing a lot of talk about psilocybin with mushrooms and marijuana, CBD, helping with chronic pains, helping with, like I said, autism, which could be anxiety-driven, stress, and things like that. So I just kind of want to make sure that we're clear that the dispensary is that, yeah. And it's not something different where somebody's going to go, well, do they mean this or that? So
it could mean just about anything, because we want to dispense whatever families need to be able to get through their child's formative years and allow them to stop regressing and continue to learn and grow through whatever they're going through. So
you kind of touched on a little bit about your grandchild and how you helped your grandchild out. So can you expand a little bit about, or a little bit more on, what people can do right now if they suspect that their child or their grandchild might be autistic? You're talking about maybe whether it be not looking at them directly in the eye or whatever it might be. Are there things that people can do to help if they know their child right now is autistic?
And there are. The first thing that comes to my mind is the fact that that child feels, and they can express, a distrust. And they also feel defensive. They feel very defensive about everything. That's why they have meltdowns, because they don't understand their own feelings as to what's going on here. But I've been triggered by something. You know, something set me off, and I've been triggered, and I'm scared, and I'm alone, and I'm, you know, I'm melting down. So what I did with my grandson was I bought some really good activity toys for he and I both to play with. And then I also set up activities for us to do together. I mean, I took him to the splash pad. I took him to the Discovery Lab, which is a science play place. It's wonderful. And I made sure that he got exposure to, you know, to activity, to physical therapy. And then what I also did was I purchased the one of the items that I want to make available through my nonprofit, which is Integrated Learning Systems Brain Harmony system. And it's headphones that you put on, and the child listens to frequencies. And those frequencies actually help heal those auditory nerves. Once those auditory nerves are healed, they can hear a lot better, but they can also process a lot better. They can understand what's going on around them instead of being afraid of everything that happens around them. So it was a no-brainer for me. It was a great investment. So I bought those and used their preliminary physical therapy program with it. And what I learned through that, and what I also had learned through my own children, is that we went to the health department, and they had some kind of a program, and it was called a bug in the ear. And so they put these little earphones on us, and they put us behind this one-way mirror. And someone was back there telling us how to talk to our children and how to earn their trust, basically, during play. And so that was really helpful, because then I was able to do that in conjunction with the headphones, with the frequencies feeding into my grandson's, you know, nervous system. And he was able to hear, too, while they were playing. He could hear just fine. So there was no danger of him not being aware of hearing something. But I literally learned to earn his trust by deferring to him and following his lead in play. And it's like I said with my own children as well, they taught me more than I could ever have taught them. So I am so grateful to them, but I am also sorry, you know, that they had to go through all of the comorbidities and the illnesses and everything else that, that came along with it for them. And that's one of the things that I regret and just want families to be able to avoid. I don't want to change who anybody is. I just want people to be able to live their lives in harmony.
So I've got a comment and then maybe something that's controversial, the question that I'd like to ask you. And my comment is that, you know, you're talking about the frequency and the sound. We've heard, and there's been for many, many years, light therapy and sound therapy, and those things do help. So I would encourage people to look into it, you know, different frequencies make your body go into a harmonious, you know, feeling. Others help with your brain waves and all that stuff. And I believe in that. Now, the other thing that is, I would say, controversial that I would like to ask you is also lately we've been hearing about the, you know, it's been over the years, helicopter parenting, where everything is okay, don't worry about this, I'll take care of that, which has caused the children to become more sensitive to things when somebody disagrees with them or when they're in a stressful situation because they don't know how to handle it. I guess my question would be, and comment maybe, is that's not autism, one, or is it? And then the second part is learn somehow to distinguish between the two, autism and that helicopter parenting and what some parents may have done. Am I making any sense?
You absolutely are. As a matter of fact, it was in the 1950s that mothers were actually called refrigerator mothers. So they were considered to be too cold at that time. But what's not as well known is the fact that they were given given drugs. Mothers were given drugs to calm their nerves and things like that. And even babies, doctors sometimes even prescribed barbiturates for babies for colic. So what I found out is that the helicopter mom thing came later. It came in the 1990s. And it came right after the explosion of autism, where more and more children were showing the signs of autism in the early 90s. And there are links to that, but I'm just not going to go into that. But there were reasons why parents were coined as helicopter parents, and that's because their children were autistic and they were wandering off. They would walk off in the middle of the night, open the door and walk out. My own brother-in-law did that as a child. He walked out of the house and he was found by the police on the railroad tracks. So, you know, there's a danger element there, and there's also an element there that says that your child might be abducted. And that has increased over the years. You know, back in the 70s when I was a kid, all the kids went out and played outside and they had their you know, banana seat bicycles and and oh, went yes. to each other's houses and just, you know, landed their bike in the yard and nobody would steal it. You know, it was a safer time. And so really, you know, our societies have devolved in a way to where parents do worry about these kind of things. They worry about their children being abducted or you know, worse, and they worry about their child wandering off somewhere and never being able to find them again, because we know that does happen sometimes. So that's where helicopter parenting, you know, that came in. And it, to me, it's almost like a blame game thing, you know, a victim blaming thing, because parents were caught off guard. I know my husband and I were, and when we tried to get help for our children, we were basically told, you know, oh no, they're normal. Everything's fine. These reactions are normal. And then they weren't. They waited until they were 6 years old, and then all of a sudden they weren't normal anymore and they needed medication. So we just need new paradigms that actually serve us instead of serving, other moneyed interests out there that, kind of take advantage and profit from our misery. And that needs to be halted.
Yeah, there's so much that we could go into about where we should be pointing the fingers and things like that. But you're so right. I mean, we're in this de-evolution type of thing, and society as a whole. So again, like I said, that's a whole another spectrum. Poor choice of words, but it really is. And just staying on focus with autism and everything, what you've talked about has been very, very helpful. And it's
Thank you.
really about awareness. So again, can you tell us your website? I know it's your first and last name, but deannhampton.com, right?
Yes, and I can also be found at crueldiagnosis.com if that's easier for someone to remember. They both go to the same place, and I'm looking forward to people wanting to join our cause and to be able to benefit from it as well, because I'm going to start up a founding membership of people, and what I really want to do is be able to hire from within. And have these other people run the program, but I also want to hire. This is my dream. I'm telling you about. It hasn't happened yet, but it's definitely in the works. I want to be able to hire single parents who are trying to raise children with autism on their own, and pay them to stay at home and take care of their children and do these methods with them that I'm setting up, and then use the products, and then they can go out into their own communities and share those, and they can charge for them or do whatever they want to with it, as long as it gets out, and as long as more and more families are helped with early intervention that they can do at home, the better off, all of us will be, because these kids will be healthier and happier.
Yeah, absolutely. I just want to throw out a PSA, a public service announcement, and say, bullying, don't bully anyone, no matter what age you are or what age they are. You don't know what they're going through, and you don't know the trauma that you may cause. So my message is don't, no bullying.
Well, I agree with that definitely. Our children were definitely bullied in school, and the school kind of covered it up. So our son was even assaulted, brutally assaulted, and the school covered it up. So it does happen. And it part of the problem was for him was or for both of our kids is that they learned to mask early on, so nobody knew that it was autism. And we didn't find out until they were adults, and so it's pretty tough.
Yeah, I'm not a parent, and I imagine, I've got sisters who have children and they have kids, but I imagine it's very, very difficult. And of course, I have many friends that have children. So, and it is very difficult to know how your child is feeling. But I guess as a parent or as parents, the best thing you can do is ask.
Right. Yeah.
So.
But if they're not able to express themselves, we need to figure out ways. And the best ways that I found are through gut healing and through those frequencies. I'm telling you, it made all the difference. My grandson was able to express himself then after the fact.
You know what's crazy? I'm going to throw out one last thing here for me before we close out is going along with that, because like you said, many kids can mask things and they may not come right out and tell you. And I have a friend's mother, so their grandchildren, they were not opening up. I said, why don't you try texting them? Because it almost seemed like when that child did not see that grandparent in front of them asking them, they couldn't read their face whether they're thinking they're angry or not. And they answered. They started giving them information that they thought that they would not get otherwise, without doing that text. And then it opened up to them so they could have a conversation later. I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting. Yeah, we didn't get texting until our kids were almost grown, so.
What you'll get now is leave me alone. Deanne, is there anything else that you'd like to let the listeners and the viewers know about yourself, your organization, your dreams, aspirations, and or what can they do today to help you?
They can get on my website and look around and see what they're interested in. I've got three different issues that they can sign up for there. I think most importantly, what I want families and parents who are struggling to understand is that they are not alone, absolutely not alone, and that there is hope. They need to not give up hope. So many parents on those Facebook pages are saying, I'm not going to be able to deal with this for the rest of my life. And what's my child going to do when I pass away? What's going to happen to them? It's a deep, a deeply traumatizing thought to have even, much less to live out. So, what I want them to know is that it's not a lost cause. There is always room for improvement, and now there is room for healing the gut that we've never had before.
Well, that was my guest, Deanne Hampton, and today we talked about autism. She was having some strong wind, so there was a concern if this podcast was going to be able to go the length, and I guess it has dropped. So I hope everybody enjoyed this podcast today and the information that she provided. Remember, you can go to deannehampton.com and you can also go to crueldiagnosis.com. Both of those URLs will lead you to the same website. So thanks for listening and thanks for watching. Everybody, take care of yourselves. Be kind to each other. And that's it. Have a great day. Bye-bye.